The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Welcome in to the Lotus Place, and it is, what is today? Wednesday? Oh, goodness gracious. Oh, this week is taking forever to pass by. Oh, my God. Come on, this week, any other time, it'll just fly by. Today is only Wednesday, but it's hump day, and we are here at the Lotus Place. Welcome in, Mother Zola and Delta.
Namaste, namaste.
Yeah,
how are you?
Welcome in.
Yeah.
Hi, Delta Cougar.
And Icy Hot is trying to join us.
Yeah.
So, let's see. She's trying to get in. But listen, we are so
glad you hear me?
You are listening in and tuning in. Yes, we can hear you, Delta. And Delta,
okay.
We do have a letter for you. Someone needs some help tonight. So in the, I guess, maybe second hour, stay tuned so that you can hear Delta's response to one of our listeners' concerns. So, yes, and Aja Zola, Mother Zola, will share one of her mind, body, and spirit health tips with us tonight, right?
Yes. Yes, wonderful. I will.
Yes, and a poem. So great.
And a poem.
And a poem. Yes. Well, I've been so out of touch. It's just been such a busy week. Okay, there's Icy Hot. Delta, I know you have some hot topics for us.
Ooh, I sure do got some hot topics for us tonight.
Okay, I know you do. What do you have for us on this Wednesday?
Oh, Black Rose, you sound like you got a bad cold tonight.
It's the Texas allergies. Yes. Welcome in, Icy Hot. You know, when I first moved here to Texas, people would always say, oh, well, you live here long enough, you'll have allergies and sinus. And I said, oh, no, I've never had any of those ailments. I'm just a healthy person, always have been. Oh, my God. I've been just suffering for the past, like, 4 years. And I was wondering, why am I always having this cold at the beginning or the end of the year? But it's darn it sinus. It just dawned on me. It's a sinus condition and allergies. So, I'm going to need Mother Hattie to pray for me.
All right. In the name of Jesus, we're going to dismiss that. Well, you know, I said, "Hi," would throw up a prayer in a minute.
Oh, we
call, and I said, "Hi," would call down the sky from heaven.
Yeah,
let the Lord use me.
Well, let the Lord just go through
that's
her,
good.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you with us, Icy Hot. Yes, Delta, come on, bring us some
our first hot topic is coming out of New York City.
New York City.
Hey, Delta, Delta, would you like to give everyone the phone number to call in? Do you know that number offhand? Well, I can give it to the people.
Oh, Delta. 641-715-3660
is the number to dial. so that you can also tune in to the Lotus Place. And we do have someone that is on hold to speak with us. And then press 549032 and don't forget the pound. And when you're ready to speak and join in, press 561. All right. We'll come to our caller after Delta brings us some quick hot topics. What you got for us, Delta? Bring us
okay,
up to
New York City.
Yes,
they have this program, you know, up there called Stop and Frisk. There was a young black man, young boy, I really say. He was on his way to a football game.
Okay.
He was 17 years old, him and a couple of his friends. And he is a straight A student on all type of, you know, things at the
honor student,
perfect upright young man.
Okay.
So he was on his way to the school to go do a football game. The police saw them for no reason at all. Him and his friends just walking. And the police stopped them.
Uh-huh.
And when the police stopped them, the young man asked him, because he was saying he knew his rights and he was trying to insert his rights like his mother had taught him. And the police, the young man said, the police didn't like it because he was asking him about why are you stopping me. The young man said the police threw him to the ground, and when he threw him to the ground, they handcuffed him and severely beat the young man. But not only top of that, there was a white lady policeman there. While they were beating him and had him on the ground, his friends were saying he hadn't done anything. What are y'all doing? We just going to a football game. We hadn't done anything. And the police woman grabbed the young man, janitor, and pulled him so hard that she ruptured his genitals. And the young man had to have surgery, and he's in a wheelchair behind it. This is how bad he was ruptured and hurt. So the young man, the doctor said he would never be able to father any children. And they trying to say that the young boy was resisting arrest and just putting all type of charges on him.
Of course.
And the children weren't doing nothing but just walking, going to a football game. And his mother said, this come from this law in New York City saying stop and frisk. And you know, we should be furious about that. We should be furious about that case.
I do recall when that case happened, and
well, it's back in the news again this week.
One thing about that with the stop and frisk, our girl or your girl Loretta Lynch, she was right up there in New York when it was over like 350 something or 360 something thousand stop and frisk,
right.
Well, when it averaged out, the number of people that lived in that area were stopped and frisked coming and going. If they were going to school, they were stopped and frisked. On the way back, then they're stopped and frisked. That sounds like a slave checkpoint to me.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, it's like a slave checkpoint. And then all the stop and frisk crap. That's nothing but some old pedophile law that they've allowed to be passed where they can sit here and fondle
black
boys. Yeah. I mean, just call this stuff what it is. These people make laws so that they can sexually assault you. Now, they just finished convicting this crazy-looking-ass man in Oklahoma, but look how many people get away with that.
Exactly. And so many have yet to come forth. Because who are they going to tell? The police?
Right. Now you want to put Bill Cosby on tired ass in the news every day about whoever talking about him, but they will not show this crazy ass white man that's been running around here raping all of these women.
No, okay, you don't hear anything about that.
Make it on Monday.
Well, let me give you a hot topic on Bill Cosby tonight. Well, go to your Facebook page. It have come out that the black model, I forgot, what's her name, the black model?
Bella Crawford. Okay. She was one of them.
She was one of the ones came out and said Bill Cosby had sexually assaulted her. Now her publicist have came out, and her publicist said that Beverly Crawford is lying. She have recanted her story. So that's a hot topic that just come out. It's lighting up Facebook. All the articles.
Mm-hmm. It's trending on Facebook. So let me ask you this, Delta. Beverly Johnson was one of his accusers, and so now that is.
Mm-hmm.
She's recanting her story,
and how she got caught in her lie is her publicist said. Beverly Crawford said that she was alone with Bill Cosby, and her publicist said that he knew that wasn't true because they was together with Bill Cosby and his wife. So when her publicist went to her and confronted her, now she's recanting her story. Beverly Johnson. She is, I don't know why I want to call her the black gospel singer name. But yeah, she's recanting her story, and it's all over.
There's always more to a story than what they give to us. Mm-hmm. That's what I believe. It's a little bit more to that than what we are hearing.
Okay. Then we got another story coming out of Louisiana.
All right. I love
Louisiana. We got this 27-year-old black man.
Okay.
And this 11-year-old little girl. And the little girl kept telling her mother that she had a stomach ache. And she kept telling her mother her stomach was aching. So the mother took the child to the doctor.
Well,
come to find out the young girl was pregnant. The 27-year-old family friend had been molesting the little child.
How old was she again?
She was 11. And she kept telling her mama her stomach hurt.
Uh-huh.
And the mother took her to the doctor. When they took her to the doctor, she was pregnant. The family friend that was 27 had been molesting and raping the child.
Mm.
And the young girl, you know, confronted and told her mother what was going on. Mm-hmm. So they arrested him. The young girl had the baby, and the family put the baby up for an adoption. That judge, he went to trial, and the judge just recently sentenced him, and the judge sentenced him to 6 to 5 years to life in prison. Yeah, that's what they got. 6 to 5. I don't know why they said it like that, but that's what they got on the thing.
He violated parole, or was a what do they call it? A previous felony.
Three times.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so you know, this is what we have to be careful who we bring up in our home.
Mm-hmm.
We bring so many people up in our home, and it's just ridiculous. These women change out these boyfriends like they change their drawers.
Like they're changing
their
nail polish.
That's a good one, isn't it?
They change their boyfriends like they change their nail polish, baby.
Then we have another case coming out of Chicago, where this mother had she had four kids, and the mother, the kids was being starved. The little boy went and told somebody that his mother would lock them into the room and would not let them eat. Nobody eat but just her and her boyfriend.
What?
Mm-hmm. Her and her boyfriend.
Come on.
Nobody but her and the boyfriend. And she was starving her deliberately. Now, and the police said when they went to the house, she had food in every cabinet, everything, everywhere. But she would keep the kids locked up in one room, her four kids, and would not let them eat. Four children would not let them come out of the room. She was starving them to death almost. So, young boy told someone, and the police came, and they arrested the mother, and they just had the mother's trial, and they found her guilty and gave her 5 years in prison and took her kids. 5 years in prison and took her kids. They didn't say what they gave the boyfriend. They charged him too, but they didn't say.
Well, that's good.
They charged him too, because even though he wasn't starving them, but he was there and he didn't try to stop her.
It was an accomplice.
Yeah, he was an accomplice. And an accomplice to child endangerment, because he knew what was going on, and he probably told her, "You need to do something about those children."
Just like Susan, what was her name? Susan Moore.
Smith.
Remember, what was her name? Smith. When she said that the black man stole her kids and killed them.
Well,
I knew that was a lie when I first heard that story, because I know
Susan Smith.
Smith, that's it. Well, I knew when she said a black man stole him, I knew that was
right.
Lying.
We knew she was lying.
Everybody knew,
some little old bad white boys, please. You really don't want
to. Well, Texas girl, I'm coming to your hometown tonight.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, what do we do?
We got one of the biggest white boys on the run, and he got his mammy running with him.
Generally, they have relationships with their mother, so they run together.
Oh, no, not this one. This is the one that made national headlines. Remember the case where the little boy said that he was he was too rich when he killed them four people?
Yeah.
What they call it?
Affluenza. Affluenza.
Yes. Well, he's back in the news again. Come to find out.
Wait a minute. Wasn't he in the news a minute ago?
Yes. He was just
last
week. But this is what kicked it off, because he hadn't even been going to the probation officer, and
he don't feel like he had to.
He didn't go. And so he was on 10 years probation. And then he was caught drinking and all that. He wasn't supposed to be drinking or none of that. And he hadn't been going. So the police goes to the home to pick him up.
Mm-hmm.
And the mother and him on Skip Town, nowhere to be found.
What about the dad?
Well, from my understanding, the dad and the mother must be separated, because they said they went to her house.
Well, because the history with that family, the mom and the father, the parents both had like a reckless background and had like charges, convictions or like evaded convictions. Through some kind of way, you can tell. I mean, they had like a criminal background, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Just a long laundry list, just a long jacket. Ridiculous. So I can see why the boy is like that. I mean,
he's on the run with her son.
You know?
Right. And it was just like a case in Mobile, Alabama, where this young white boy that was 19 years old, he had hit this man, he was drunk and driving, and he had came from a prominent white family. And he hit this young man in a car, and he killed him. And he went off to prison, but he didn't stay no more, didn't hardly stay no more than a year. So he came
right back
home. For
everybody to forget about it. Yeah.
And right.
Right back home. You absolutely correct. Come right
very
back
clever.
Home and did not stay no time. But now this
yeah.
is weirder,
That's
this
what
is
happened.
The weirdest thing, y'all. This is a true story. He came back home and he started back to drinking. This time what he did is he had already went for killing one man in a car wreck for driving drunk. Then
okay.
he come back and hit the two gay guys that was a couple. They was riding their bicycles and for exercise, and he hit both of them and killed them. So
both
this
of
guy,
them?
He killed both of them at the same time. You can pull a letter up on the computer and take a
really
guess
sad.
What? I
that
bet you his family could not save him this time. His family, because the community and the gay community rose up and they handled
you know
him
they
this
did.
Time.
Oh, yeah.
And they handled
it. Can't win
this?
Against them.
Where did this take place, Delta?
In Mobile, Alabama.
Alabama.
Really?
Okay, then. I'm glad that they rose up. All right, Delta.
Let me get one more and this to end. And I want y'all opinion on this. And me and Papa was discussing this one.
Okay,
there was, it's a post on Facebook. I posted it on my page. And it do not say where it was at. They just showed the video. And these hood rats, they was fighting. Well, you know how the young girls go? Somebody made a post about somebody on Facebook. So the girl goes over to the other house, and she walks, and she have another girl with her, and she's filming this video and filming it, that saying that she's going to go over here and beat this other girl. And she knocks on the door, and her friend is filming it. She knocks on the door, and when she knocks on the door, she starts talking to the girl. Next thing you know, she punched the girl. Then when she punched the girl, her and the girl started fighting. The girl started fighting and went all over there inside the house. They started tearing up the house fighting.
Oh, my goodness. The girl
was beating her so the girl broke her loose.
All this on Facebook.
And ran to the kitchen. And the girl got a knife out of the kitchen and stabbed the girl in the chest. I don't know if the girl lived or not. But the comments were saying, some said she shouldn't have stabbed her. And me and Papa was in a dispute about it, and Papa was saying she should have killed her. Say if she wasn't killed, she should have been killed. Because she had no business going to the house, is what Papa was saying. She had no business going to the house to jump on that homeowner. So the girl that went to the house to jump on the homeowner, she was stabbed in the chest. So me and Papa were saying, she shouldn't have really tried to kill her. I don't know if she killed her or not, but what we were saying is she shouldn't have, I feel like she should have just got a baseball bat or something and just beat her. But Papa said she should have stabbed her and killed her. And so what is y'all take on it? If somebody come to your house to beat you, what is your take on it?
My take is, if someone comes to my home to harm me, then I will try my best to harm them. I will defend myself. Now, whether I'm just saying, I'm going to kill you, That's not in my mind. I am trying to defend myself. I'm trying to defend my own life by whatever is most convenient. I'm not going to be saying, now, what did I put that baseball bat? Hold on right there. Whatever is handy, and I must say, although I may have a soft voice, when I'm furious, I'm very furious. So when that knife came down, I'm not going to say, well, let me go for the arm, like where, you know, she can just be just kind of injured. I'm going to go for whatever is close by so that I can stop this person. Now, I don't want to take anybody's life. That's not what I'm here for. Mm-hmm. But I am here to defend my own. Mm-hmm. That is how I feel about it. The same as if someone were to break in my home when I had a gun, then I'm not going to be trying to just kind of, you know, aim to just like, let me get that kneecap right there. You know, I'm just going to try to, you know, defend myself, you know.
Well, I wouldn't advocate killing anybody either, but the girl should not have been going to the other person's house. I didn't even really hear the first part of what you stated as to why she went over to her house. But whatever,
because
it is,
she wrote a page. She wrote, yes, no. You know how she is. They look like they look like they in their 20s. And she wrote something on Facebook. She said she wrote something on Facebook talking bad about her.
Oh, my goodness. And so now somebody lost their life. Well, really, two people lost their lives because, well, it depends on what state. Okay, you said what, Alabama? I don't know if Alabama.
No,
no.
I don't really know. No, it didn't say where it was at. They just posted it, and they posted the fight. And then what makes it so sad? If you look at the video, you can hear when the girl stabbed her because she hollered, "Oh!"
Oh, you mean all of this is on the video on Facebook?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, let me explain.
Yeah.
Let me slow
myself
down.
Yeah.
This is what happened.
Well, hold on, Delta, because we're getting ready to go to a quick break. Because that is crazy and insane. And I think someone did have a question or a comment. So we'll take a call and we'll also hear from Aja Zola. So we'll type some poetry for us. We'll be right back. You listen to the Lotus Place.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All right, and we are back. I just want to say a couple of things really quick, Delta, before you go back into your hot topic. I want to thank Scotty for putting me on to this Blab website where you can have these live conversations. It's super cool. I watched a few people on there, and it's really interesting because you can just select what you want to watch based on the topic. And you can also get like a notice or whatever. And so listen, people, using this internet and the computer, we can use this internet and computer and all of this for so many different things and so many different facets of our lives. But for one thing, I know we can get on here and we can make some money. We can do some things. So we just got to really sit down and put our heads together and have a meeting of the minds. Meet another mastermind, because I'm telling you, the future is here. The future is now. So Periscope and Blab, those are my two little new hot items that I found out about over the past couple of weeks. So Periscope is also like a little live streaming deal. So people are really putting out some content, and you can put this content out, and I mean, that's the community, the people are now
making the news, making the stars.
Yes, I've been seeing that.
Yes. Nobody's telling these young people, okay, this is a star. The young people are making their own stars by following people on YouTube and Periscope and all of these different websites that people have. And so I just want to put that out there. And also, Delta, let me just put this one quick little hot topic out there. The people up in Michigan, once again, are suffering with the water situation. Now, after they sat here and tried to extort money out of these people for something that should be free, especially when you live up there by Lake Michigan, water, 75% of the earth, 3/4 of the earth, it's free. I thought this was our land, you know, your land. This land is our land. This land is your land. Remember that? I thought this was our land. So free the land. Will you free the land? And so anyway, in Flint, Michigan, the water has been tested to have a high concentration or amount of lead.
Lead. Oh, no.
These people have been drinking lead water. If we can't have lead paint in our homes, then we sure can't drink lead water. Why would you do that? So I think that there's some groups that are getting together and buying water to send to the people in Flint, Michigan. Mother had it, maybe you can put out one of your righteous prayers for them, too, that the water is purified. But, you know, really, we do have that power. We really do.
Yeah.
If we just really focus and we purify this water in the name of God, Allah, whoever you want to purify it in, but just really purify it. But these people put some dangerous stuff in the water. Now, I don't even know if we have the strength and the power to purify it like we really should and could and should be able to if they wouldn't harm us already with so many chemicals and stress and all of this nonsense we have to deal with. Dealing with these proxy races and flat out crazy people. But anyway, I just had to get that out. My little vent. So Delta, go ahead on with your hot topics, and then we need to move into our main topic for the night.
Okay, we can skip over that one, and don't forget that on the Freddie Gray case, and this will be my last one, on the Freddie Gray case tonight, that we know that they had a mistrial today. So everybody wanna blame the prosecutor, and said the prosecutor did a rush job, she went too quick. Well, we knew when they put the white supremacists on the jury, we already knew that it wasn't going nowhere. So we don't need to forget that tonight. We need to keep that in mind, and we need to just keep a marching, keep a lifting our head up. That's all I can say. I don't know what else to say, because really our cries is not really truly going nowhere, because they started killing him. They just killed the boy last night in Chicago. Said that he looked like he supposed to have had a gun. Okay, come on now.
Yes. The normal rhetoric. I was in fear for my life and the others around me, and I thought he had a knife. I thought he had a gun and all of this. Yes. I'm so tired of it. So, until we do something different, they'll keep doing the same thing. Is what I have to say about that.
Exactly.
And that's what we're going to make a move. 2016. Delta, you have some hot topics tonight. Anybody have any comments? The hot, you've been a little quiet. Well, we haven't let you really speak. We've been listening to Delta with our hot topics and me venting. Any comments on Delta's hot topics? I know. For sure, I will.
The Apple Winslow boy, that's what we should be outraged about. Is there somebody that we can contact? That this boy killed four people And now his mama got him and ran somewhere with him, maybe out of the country or anywhere, because they had so much of money that they had access to. So we should be outraged. We should be going after the judge that let this boy loose.
Well,
we should,
you know,
so you know,
so
the
many,
judge that let him loose, we should be going after this judge. How can we
you
go
know what,
after this judge?
How can we go after, look, how can we go after Angela Corey down in Sanford, Florida, that didn't fight a case? How can we go after, what's her name, Anita Alvarez up in Chicago? How can we go after the medical examiner in Memphis, Tennessee that lied for years?
Oh, yeah.
So police officers can get off. And how can we go after this police? I mean, we'll be going after each individual forever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's the whole system that we have to attack, because if it's not that judge, then it's this other
it's
judge.
It's going to be another one.
Yeah, I mean, that many of them are so crooked. I do applaud that one black judge, I can't think of his name, and I should, because he receives the Black Star Award. I'll look up his name. He dismissed the jury because he said, what, that there were not one black person that was selected? So, Delta, yeah, I mean, I feel you, and it would be great if we could have organizing resources where someone can go into their community and talk to those people so that we could help them get started, and then they take on the campaign. Because, see, people have to learn how to organize and work their own city. I mean, we've always had people come in from different places, but still, if those don't teach those people how to continue that fight, if they don't have that political education, right, if they don't know why they're marching, it's not just about, like people were saying about Mike Brown, it's not just Mike Brown, it's not just about Mike Brown being shot down. This is for all the Tyrones, Jerome, Carlos, for all the Juanita, Sunny, Shanita. This is for all the
right.
people that were shot down just walking home, walking in the street.
Right.
It's not just
right.
Mike Brown. It's not just Freddie Gray. I mean, it's all these people for years
yeah.
and decades and
yeah.
centuries.
It's just the media now allows us to see it and know the details. You know, we didn't have before.
Yeah, they never thought that we would use these iPhones and Androids or whatever, these cell phones with these cameras. They thought that we were just going to be filming ourselves.
And that's what's
catching
them.
And all of that.
They've been doing it.
We're shining the light on your bull crap. So,
yeah.
But you know what? Tonight, let me go ahead on and let people know the topic. And we are open to that discussion, our main topic, of course. In addition to those hot topics that Delta has, and I was just going to read a poem. So let me let you all know that you first can call in to 641-715-3660, and the participant code is 549032 pound. Press star 61 if you'd like to comment. We are talking about daddy issues. And when I think of daddy issues, I think of daddy issues, like primarily for the female, but it's also transferable in terms of men, boys, because if they don't have a father figure there to teach them about being a man, how to be a man, how to interact with women, how to have a relationship, and this child is unable to see that with his mother and his father, then I think that they too can have some difficulties in relationships. And I think that a lot of these younger women are seeing this now, because see, I don't think too much back in the day, even a man wouldn't allow you just to sit there and starve your children. You know, he'd be like, you know,
right, exactly.
We got to
yeah.
these children. You know, what's wrong?
Right.
With them? They would probably sit around and hang around for a minute, but eventually, I think a real man, he'd just get up and leave.
Exactly.
Like, I can't deal with you. If you don't even care about your children, how you
right.
care about me?
Right.
You don't care about your children.
Right. So, that says a lot about your compassion, your heart,
absolutely.
Everything.
Absolutely. And so, daddy issues. I know I can speak on daddy issues. Having if your father was absent, or maybe was there but still was absent. If you didn't have that father figure there to ground you and share with you what to expect and what to accept in a relationship, I think it can spill over into your adult relationships.
It does spill over. Yeah. I don't care what nobody says. Daddy issues does spill over. I don't care how grown you is or how old you is. Those issues will follow you, because I am a grandmother of 13, and I have issues from my father, because my father, he was an alcoholic, and my father, he was an alcoholic that when he drank, he was very abusive toward us, and you know, he would get drunk and cuss us out and run us out the house and beat us up and watched him beat my mother and different things. And, you know, we just lived that away. And that's something that really, really bothers me to this day. You know, it's something that
it
really...
How does it bother you? I mean, in what kind of way, when you say it bothers you today, in what kind of way?
Emotionally, it's like emotional. I can't stand to be hollered at. I can't stand to be cursed. I just, those are the things that he used to do, and it just bring up bad memories. It just stuff that it bothers you because you didn't even have a good relationship with your father.
Because
I used to long for. Men don't realize the damage that they do when they don't be a father to their children. I don't care how grown your child is. Your child can be 80 years old and you can be 100. That child still wants the love of that parent. And they still want the love of that parent. And when a parent don't go and take the time and, you know, you should bond with your child. And if you can't bond with your child, something is wrong. When a daddy got daughters and you can't even go and take your daughters out to dinner, you can't even pick your phone up and call your daughter. You can't even give your daughter a hug. You can't even tell your daughter you love them. Something is wrong. That's something that, you know, really bothers you, bothers people. And, you know, Canty, sent me a text tonight. I don't know if he owned, but he sent me a text, because when you sent me the text, I sent it out. And Canty sent me a text, and in his text, he was telling me how that, you know, from a young man, his father was a preacher and pastor, and he was telling me about the issues that he had with his father. And he said, his father would get up before the pulpit and tell everybody how much that he loved his congregation. But Candace said, healing is so painful, he can't even talk about it. He said he can't never remember to this day how that his father told him that he ever loved him. And see, people don't realize this is stuff that'll haunt you. It will bother you. So we have to be careful.
I mean, I think that
you know,
go ahead, Mother Hattie. I see how
on the other side of the spectrum are those dads that love their children so much that they indulge them. That other spectrum where they just love them so much they don't want to have any disciplining done. They don't want to hold them accountable for anything. They don't want to just all they want to do is just love them and let them grow wild and do what they want to do. And I think that can be just as devastating to children when they have that other opposite end of the spectrum. Okay, my parent, my daddy didn't tell me he loved me, never, ever, ever. And then the other one, my daddy loved me so much, I did whatever I wanted. Just like the little boy with the affluenza there, you know? Kind of that thing, only you may not be affluent. I've seen fathers do that to children, and they were very, very poor people. And yet, the children were not held accountable. Their daughters or sons are not held accountable for anything. They just love them so much. It was kind of like they idolized them and they worshiped them to the point of their detriment, because children grew up without having any boundaries and self-control and that kind of thing. And yet you have this dirt poor family doing that.
And I have another. I'm sorry, I thought you.
When they go out into the world, they think they are the kings and queens of Sheba, and they don't have a pot to piss in and when to throw it out of, and then they come into this cultural class of economics that causes them to really get broken and shattered. So that's kind of what I was.
Yeah, that is the opposite end of the spectrum.
Now there's also another part to that that I can bear witness to in my own family of not disciplining a child, and it really doesn't have any it doesn't have anything to do with wealth. In this particular case, my father, like your father, Delta Cooker, was an alcoholic. And beatings were, you know, just a, what do they call it? Something of the day, you know. It was just normal. It was very normal. And so I grew up hearing a lot of curse words and shouting. And so consequently, like when I hear curse words, you know, for a long, long time, I thought of violence, you know. And so I did not, you know, and I didn't hear my mom curse. So I had this thing about cursing. You're like, oh, you know. And my father was so abusive to all of us, as well as my mom, that my brother ran away. My oldest brother ran away. Then my sister ran away. And then the two left, my brother and myself. We were... luckily sent away. And so when my oldest brother, the first one that ran away, when he had two boys of his own, he did not discipline them at all, because we had been beaten and knocked around, especially him. We had holes in our walls because my father would aim for him and he would move his head and the fist would go through the wall. So we had holes in our walls. And so my brother just so shook up from that, he would not say anything in regards to discipline his two boys. And so therefore, to this day, his boys are like 35, you know, 36, 37, something like that. They didn't finish school. They don't really have like a job. You know, they may sell CDs. One of them, after so many years of being the stay-home dad, he got a job, I think, at McDonald's or one of these fast food places. And the other one, I don't really know what he does. But neither one of them have their GED or their diploma. And the mother, my brother's wife, she pays most of their bills. And so, therefore, they will not become totally... And both of these boys are with women that have children, you know. So all of this from my father beating us so much that my brother didn't want to discipline his children at all. He just went the total opposite, you know. And so you bring up two boys who are just totally just out of it, just because they did not have, and they got everything they wanted, you know. So it does make a huge difference. And though my father was there, he was very abusive. So how you the environment you bring up your children up in, it really has an effect, like Dr. Kluger said, for the rest of their lives. My brother's like 66 or 7. He's about 67, going on 68. So, and my brother, you know, started drinking too, you know. But he was able to hold down a very decent job and retire and stuff. So those are all very good examples of the effects of the parents, you know. And there's no book on how to be a good parent.
There's no book unless you want to read Dr. Spock's book. And
then he have some problems.
Seems like everything just went crazy. They should have kept that corporal punishment in school. Tap that little hand or something when these children act up. It's amazing.
That's something
changed. How these, I mean, police are just like teachers in the classrooms now, in the school.
Mm-hmm.
They're already conditioning their minds to be guarded, to be watched, to be policed, to be comfortable with the police state.
Yes, yes. Around you all the time, doing your studies. And like you said the other day, the schools are built sort of like in the architecture of prisons.
They really are. Yeah. Some of them. Now, here in Texas, the district's range is so expansive. I mean, you have from Section 8 to children that come from millionaire families, million-dollar families. And they come from, well, old good money, that good old Texas money, some of them.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's absolutely amazing. Some of these schools that are funded by, like, Valero, the gas station, their schools look like, I don't know, a stadium, an auditorium, a convention center. Something like that. But then you go into some other neighborhoods. Oh, my God. I just say, oh, Lord, have mercy. But listen, let me see. I think that we actually have someone that did want to speak. Let me see if this caller wants to speak now. Caller at 804, I'm coming to you. If you would like to share a comment, this is your time. And then we'll hear from Mother Zola. Caller from 804. Would you like to offer a comment? 804.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll let 804 get it together.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, that's 804. Oh, I'm glad he called in tonight. Do you recognize that number? That's that retired sheriff.
Is that our friend? Okay.
Yes.
Caller from 804. Well, I'll tell you this. This is, we also have Brother Brown. Is this Brother Brown?
Yeah. I had to drop somebody off, and I'm sorry I'm calling late. Yeah,
That's okay, Brother Brown.
What you think
Brown,
about
too.
I want to know what Brown think about
Hi, Brother
the daddy
Brown.
Part.
How you doing?
Yes.
Great.
Well, let's let Aja read her poem, and then Brother Brown can tell us what he thinks about that subject, because I also want to know what does anyone think about the, I think it was the Republican debate. Anyway, but Mother Zola, come on, give us some poetry.
All right. Okay, everybody knows, not everybody, but I'm a dancer. So this is called The Last Dance. All right. Their paths crossed at a time when the sun had begun to move behind the clouds at the end of a long, wintry day. She had almost given up on ever finding that one true love. But here she was with someone new, so alive full of magic and set on changing the world. But strong, heavy tides rose against their happy, playful union and echoed shouts of caution and omens. Premonitions and intuitions so loud at times they were deafening, then again as faint as the rustle of the wind, began whispering things from a dark, unsettled past, pushing its way into the present, straining for attention. But all forewarnings were carelessly tossed to the wind. And as suddenly as it started, the song ended abruptly, and the twirling came to a screeching halt. The once so happy ballerina fell to the floor in a pool of tears. The dance was over, and the room was dim. Alas, they each moved mechanically back into their separate worlds and began the arduous task of putting the cracked pieces of their own lives back together again. They were love coaches who had met on the way to help each other fine-tune their steps. Sometimes dancing solo for a while can heal and rejuvenate the soul and prepare one for that last special dance. Ajazola.
Special dance. That's beautiful, Aja. Thank you. Give them a hand clap.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
sound
you.
Effect. They, oh, snap, snap. That's right. That's what they do.
Yeah, that's okay. Right. Snap, snap.
Everybody snap, snap. Come on. Two fingers snap, snap. Yeah. Okay. That was great. That was great. Thank you. How'd you come up with that poem, Aja?
Well, I hadn't dated anyone in a long time. I grew up doing these spurts, you know, of my dating. And then I met somebody, and we just seemed to click, and everything was happy, happy, and I was twirling and dancing in my head, you know. I love to dance. La, 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 la. And then all of a sudden, everything just kind of crashed, and I was like, what? Oh, man, I thought this was it, you know. But it was just, it was like a love coach. I think now of the relationships I have that don't work as love coaches. You know, to coach me as to what I want and what I don't want.
Let me write that down. Where is my pen? Love coaches. Because that's a great segue into something I want to mention also. But let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and we will hear more of this dancing. And we'll hear from Brother Brown. We're listening to the Lotus Place Radio. Let's talk. Radio Network.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media of the new millennium.
All right, you are listening to the Lotus Place Radio this Wednesday night. We're talking about daddy issues. Did your father teach you about relationships? Did you learn about how to connect and relate to someone of the opposite sex of your father? Because I've read that, and I've experienced it, I can say firsthand, not having a father there that shares that with you, it definitely can spill over into your adult relationships. Because although my father was there until, let's see, I was 8 years of age when my parents divorced. And even though he was there for those 8 years, it was like he wasn't there. Literally,
because he was a fireman and he worked like every other night, you know, he was away. But even when he was there, he was absent. And so we never really had that TV style father and daughter relationship. And it used to hurt me for, oh my God, it really hurt me because like the first 14 years of my life, I was terrified of my father for whatever reason. But I'll get into my story. I want to hear mostly from you guys and I'll pick back up and share my story. But I want Aja to share with us briefly what's a dance package. Because I thought of dance package when you talked about the dancing and the twirling. Hello, hot girlfriends. Oh my God. When I was a teenager and they'd go out to these little nightclubs and party. And so what's a dance package and how can a person purchase a dance package?
That's too funny. Well, my girlfriend and I, we would get all dressed up real cute. We were quite a pair. We called our daughters called us the chocolate posse because we were dark skinned, and it was three of us and all of us dark skinned. You know, just kind of they just came up with that name, so they called us the chocolate posse.
And so we all they were high.
Yeah, we looked good. We did.
Honey,
I have
those
to say,
women that would have on those stilettos and little tight skirts, and but still looking classy and sexy.
Very classy, always.
Very
always classy.
You know.
Yeah.
Yes, always classy.
Yeah, we would always say, "Well, how are we going to dress tonight?" We would say, "Sexy casual," or "a dressy casual." We'd always sort of kind of, you know, someone would come in with hot pants on and the other with a long black dress with a stud up inside. We'd always be, you know, together, synchronized. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, in sync. And always classy, always classy. We'd always give ladies, you know, the props when they're looking good, you know, wearing them shoes, girl. You know, we never hated on anybody. And we didn't make guys feel bad when they came to our table. We always respected the fact that it took them a lot to come to our table, you know, and act, dance, you know, three beautiful women. So if one of us didn't feel like dancing, the other one would say, you know, I don't really feel, but so-and-so will dance with you, won't you? And then that was that cue, get up, you know. So anyway, one thing that we came up with is that guys would come over to the table and they'd ask for a dance. So that's cool. We'll dance. All three of us love dancing. You know, we all had our own style, you know, so we all, I never got tired. You know, if anybody else was tired, I don't dance. So.
She's a dancer.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. Never got tired. Never got tired. So if a guy came to the table, asked to dance, that's fine. We'll go dance. And, you know, it's always nice of them to, you know, back in the day, they would walk you back to your table. So that's the way it's supposed to be, okay? Unless the two of you hit it off, you know, like, hey, you know, I like him, you know. Then you invite him to your table. A dance package is when the guy, after asking you to dance and, you know, leading you back to your table, thanking you for the dance, and you always say, you know, I'm right here, you come back, you know, and they decide to prop themselves down at the table. That's a dance package. No, I did not purchase a dance package. I only wanted the dance. Same thing with the drink package. You're at the bar. You're at the bar. And the guy, you know, we may not even be at the bar because you can sit at the bar. Anybody can sit at the bar. You're at the table. And the guy wants to buy you a drink. And so, yes, fine. Why don't you send over the drink, you know, let the lady, you know, you do your little eye contact, you know, and then through that flirtation, then she invites you over. But no, he buys a $2.75 drink and then plops himself down to stay there for the rest of the night. No drink
he said
package.
$2.75.
Yeah.
No, it's been a long time since you've been in the club buying drinks.
I meant to say 375.
Shoot, 375. And what club are you going to? I'm going to go there and get my drink. Wait a minute.
No. What I'm saying is, he bought the cheapest drink that was at the bar.
He bought the cheapest drink.
And I was always so quiet that this one time I threw everybody off because this guy bought a drink, and I know it was a glass of wine. I know it could not have been more than $2.50 for the glass of wine. And he sat down in our little booth. My girlfriend was with her guy, but that meant that he was going to be with me for the rest of the night. So I told him, yes, that's a drink package. He bought a drink package that I did not offer him.
Essentially, yes. The drink package is when they buy a drink for you. A guy purchases a drink. And
they think they have you.
And then that drink entitles them to you. For the rest of the night.
You don't look at anybody else.
We used to call that C-blocking. And those C-blocking is, you call it C-blocking. You are C-blocking now. You need to move around. You know, exchange numbers, that's fine.
Yes.
If it's like that. You know, but if it's just really, really great, like, oh my God, I feel like I really met somebody. Okay, then great. Yeah, that's fine.
They will get the signal. The woman knows how to give you the signal.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Absolutely. So, anyway, Brother Brown, what's going on with you? What's happening? I think Delta had a question for you.
Huh? Hello?
Delta. Yes.
My question is, I wonder, ask Brother Brown, what did he think about the verdict today, where they found they had a hung jury, where they dismissed it up there today. But what they were saying is, do you think the prosecutor moved too fast? Because this is what they saying, the prosecutor took the case to the and tried it too quickly. So do you think she moved too quick? Because this is what everybody's saying on all the news channels.
Well, the reason that the case was moved in an expeditious manner was because they wanted to go ahead and try these officers, and whatever the verdict was, they're trying to get this behind them because they know that Baltimore being 51% black is one of the poorest cities in this country that has a majority of black people. And they have one of the most extrinsic drug problems in all of America. Baltimore is full of heroin.
It sure is. Oh my goodness. I just recently heard a story about that. Anyway, go ahead, Brother Brown. My goodness, I thought about what you told me about the hair up there.
They don't want this to erupt again. And right now, there's so much tension in Baltimore. And my daughter lives in Baltimore. And I told her, last time they marched, she was out there, you know, and she was telling us how proud she was that she was protesting. Excuse my language, I told them the people are asking the house. I said, because what you're marching up and down the street for, you might get your head split and don't know who split it. Because you got provocateurs out there. And that's what happens to kids. Somebody that nobody knows comes in and starts a whole bunch of stuff. These kids get locked up. I've seen it happen in New York. These kids get locked up and get their head split open by the police. Because they actually would attack the police. Okay, they're not ready for that type of element. And it has nothing to do with us being scared. It has everything to do with us not being organized. See, there's nothing you can do if you're not organized. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it ain't nothing but your homework. If you're not organized, it will not be successful. And these protests were orchestrated by other people. They were orchestrated by in a manner that will produce any kind of significant value to the situation. Because we're not looking at the situation. So when these kids got up and marched up down the street and burned up police cars, and the first thing that the Attorney General for the state of Maryland said, and then we got to hurry to get this mess behind us. Because guess what? They might burn the whole goddamn city down. So that's why the case was tried like that. These people on TV do not know anything about what's going on in Baltimore. They know absolutely nothing about what's going on in the state of Maryland. Okay, these news commentators on CNN and MSNBC, that's all they are news commentators. Nobody has, the majority of them have never even lived in the state of Maryland. And they're trying to keep this as civil as possible. Because they know that a hung jury is not a conviction. Okay? And if it's not a conviction, it's just like a powder keg. It's just like somebody's getting ready to light the fuse and set their hand on dynamite off. And if they did, and once they do that, they will bring back in the provocateurs, and it'll be just like it was the last time it was in Baltimore. It'll be chaos. So she's trying to get this behind them. She's trying to get all of this stuff together, and she's being pushed by the governor and the attorney general. Get this behind us, because Baltimore, of course, is the major metropolitan city in the state of Maryland. It's not the capital. It's not Annapolis. But it's the major city where economics and things happen. Everything happens in Baltimore. So by being one of the poorest cities with the lowest income per capita rate in the state of Maryland, other than where I live at, you know, it's just like a powder keg. These people on Pennsylvania Avenue where they burned down the CVS store that night, and all up and down North Avenue, which I travel frequently, these people are just waiting. They're just waiting. You know, shop owners I call up there and talk to some people. The shop owners are closing up already. But they said they're not going to be there. And downtown will be protected by National Guard. And, you know, it's just chaos. It's just a chaotic situation. But
I'm not surprised at the verdict.
Oh, I'm not even.
Lack thereof. Mm-hmm. A real verdict. I'm not surprised.
The whole problem is they're trying to make him the scapegoat. Now, they didn't try the white officers first. They tried
right,
him.
They had the first contact with them. They had the first contact with Freddie Gray. They know right. Damn well those white officers from that video, they're the ones that should have been charged first, should have been charged,
right.
Period.
Right.
Number one. And then find out, okay, whoever was in the van. Okay. Lesser charges or whatever. But I mean, the truth of the matter is they should have given that young man some assistance. They knew
right.
He was screaming there. He doesn't need to be coherent enough to say, I need help. You should be able to, since you are now in control of this person's body and person, then, okay, since you're making all the decisions, then you should have made the rational decision that he needs assistance. I heard one brother say that, you know, it's a shame that that it was the black officer that knew that this young man was in a state of emergency in need of some medical care, and him being another brother didn't have any sensitivity towards the situation that Freddie Gray was in. So,
well, you know, whatever. I think what came out in the trial and in the testimony was that even though he was at the scene, number one, he was not the arresting officer. And
right.
Normally, the arresting officer and the supervisor, who, you know, the higher up personnel with Frank, they're the people who can call the shots. And this guy was not the patrol officer. And he was not the arresting officer. He was not the one that actually said that he was not the first officer on the scene, or as they call it, the first responder to the situation. That put Freddie Gray in that condition. So it was somebody else's responsibility. And the problem I had is that how did he get in that position? How did his body become so limp when they was taking him to the car and you see them dragging him to the paddy wagon? How did it become that situation? Because that black officer at the time all of this shit happened, you know, and he was not at the scene of the crime. It was two white officers. They were the ones that apprehended Freddie Gray. And they're being charged also, but they weren't the first ones that they put on, they weren't the first ones to be prosecuted for this crime.
Yeah, I find that interesting. I would like to know, like, how did they decide? How was the decision made to try him first?
That was a political decision. And, you know, in my opinion.
Very political.
In my opinion, what needs to be done is that he needs to be, number one, he is not the culprit. He is a scapegoat. He needs to be exonerated from all charges. Okay, because he didn't do it. The people that need to be prosecuted, so you have an arrest, you have a chain of command. The arresting officer, the person that responded to whatever the situation was, that put handcuffs on Freddie Gray, they were the people that had to fill out the police report. They were the arresting officers. It was their duty. Okay? And when they fill out the police report, they have to fill out why did they approach Freddie Gray? Was Freddie Gray doing anything? Did they observe any type of behavior? And, you know, when you observe behavior as a police officer, we took this when I took criminal justice, you just can't walk up to a person without suspicion of a crime being committed and apprehend them. See, something had to take place for them to even put their hands on Freddie Gray legally.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, no, I'm saying they don't, that's what the law, that's what you're supposed to
be. That's what it's supposed to be like, but we know that's not what happens. We know that they've been given so much leeway now, they can do anything to anybody, they feel they can get away with it.
Yeah,
he looks suspicious.
Right, and what I'm saying.
No, he smells suspicious.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that all black people are criminals in the eyesight of white supremacy and racism. All of us are
exactly. All you gotta do, driving while black.
All of us
walking
are
walking while black, breathing while black, like the brother that read the poem here, breathing while black.
Right.
That's
all
you
of
have
us
to do.
Yeah, all of us are susceptible to these elements, you know. But as I stated about the protocol for an arrest, once you are arrested, the officer who arrested you, until a supervisor arrives on the scene, they're the one responsible for anything that happened. This black officer was not the first responder to the scene of Freddie Gray.
Huh.
There were two white officers. And, you know, my problem is that in the whole situation, when were they gonna apprehend them? When were they going to prosecute these two white officers who actually handcuffed him? The black officer did not handcuff Freddie Gray. By the time he got there, the situation had already escalated to the degree of us seeing Freddie Gray dragged into the police wagon. So
they want.
Go ahead.
They want the black officer to receive the buck of the anger, the first part of the anger, so that by the time they get to the white officers, things will kind of cool down a little bit, especially when they get the black officers a stiff sentence. Because because everything that they're going to bring out is going to fall on the black officers, because that's what they've got to talk about. They've got to talk about what happened to Freddie Gray. And the black officers are going to have to state what their involvement is, even though it wasn't the first involvement, the first contact. That's going to cloud the whole picture of the whole trial, because they're going to drag that out. They're going to drag that out and try to make it seem like they could have done more than what they did and that they were just as guilty as the white. It's very systematic. It's no wonder why. It's very systematic that they're doing it like this.
Well,
the same reason why they charged them with such stiff charges in the first place. If they had been white, they wouldn't have gotten those stiff charges like that. Darn. I mean, they were there, but they didn't inflict the harm.
Well, I want to ask Mr. Brown a question. Mr. Brown, why was she charged? Why would the black lady charge him like that then? Why would she do that?
All of them were charged.
No, but I'm saying, why would she charge him with the hardest part? And she and we all knew that the white police was there first. So isn't she just as guilty too? The prosecutor.
Who does the prosecutor work for? Let's break it down. Who does the prosecutor work for?
Yes. Yes. It's a family.
I want to, let's walk it back. Who does the prosecutor work for? The state. The police.
The
arm of the state.
Right, that's who she works for.
The military part of the state. Yes, the military arm of the state. So she works for the state, meaning she works for the system.
Exactly.
She doesn't work for the people.
Nope.
Even though...
She's part of the state government.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, that's her job. That's what... This is my take. If that's the job that she chose to do, then by all means, that's what she's doing what she was told to do.
Yeah.
They're taking oaths. They're taking oaths.
Right. It's
allegiance
just like any
to
other,
the state.
It's just like any other public official, whether it's the mayor, city council person, when they take these positions, based on the element of what they're supposed to do to carry on their job. It's just like anybody else can get a job. If you get a job as a school teacher, you have to do what the school system says you're supposed to do. If you're a public school teacher, teaching in public school, then you do what you're told to do.
Let's take this caller from 804. Let's see if our caller is ready. Welcome in to the Lotus Place. Would you like to offer a comment? Okay. Trying to give you time to come off mute. Sounds like you're trying to work with it. Okay, 804. Oh, excuse me. Oh, I thought I pressed my mute button. My finger's moving too slowly. My apologies. These Texas allergies, people, oh my goodness, I never thought I would have this problem. So, but I want to read this, Brother Brown, and I'd like to hear from you since you are a brother, you're a male, and I know that you've been involved in your daughter's lives. Okay, so daddy issues. This is from the Urban Dictionary. Whenever a female has a turbulent relationship with her father, a messed up relationship with her father, or absence of a father figure during her childhood, it tends to spill into any adult relationship they embark on, usually to the chagrin of any poor male in their life. And so, now that's the definition of daddy issues. And let me see. Let me just get this up on the ground. Just give me a second. And because what I want to
this is the five signs a girl has daddy issues. For those of you that have daddy issues, we want to see if these signs are accurate. Okay. Number one, five signs a girl has daddy issues. Number one, she's excessively slutty or harbors twisted sexual fantasies. Okay. That's number one. I could elaborate later. Maybe I can read some of what's stated, but I'll just go through the numbers at this time. Number two, the list at this time. Number two, she engages in some form of self-mutilation. Now, I think these are very extreme. I'm just going to say that.
Go ahead.
I'll just read these and then we can converse. Number three is delusionally confident. Oh my goodness. Number four is intimidated by a self-assured masculine man. I think these, I don't agree with any of these. Has body image issues or issues around food, i.e. eating disorder. Okay. So does anybody relate to any of those? Do you want to share? If you do, it's okay, because we're about healing here.
I don't have any of those issues.
I can't really relate.
But I do have daddy issues, though. But
that sounds like white male issue there.
Yeah,
that's what I was.
Some white male wrote this.
I didn't want to say it, Del the Cougar, but yeah, I was thinking that too.
Mm-hmm.
Who wrote that?
You know. It's from some stupid article. You know, anybody can post anything these days, so you know, it doesn't have to have any validity to it. Yes, Brad Brown.
My question is, when you did that thing about defining data issues, who defined that? Who wrote that definition out?
Okay, well, I can say this much. I don't know about, like, I think people may have different definitions, but what we can attest to is that there are women, like myself, that have experienced daddy issues, the effects of daddy issues, shall I say. So it's a phenomenon.
Yeah, it is.
So, you know, getting into, like, the definitive part of it, who defines it, I'm not sure, but I know that some women feel this because I know I feel it. I've heard it from other people and I've read about it.
No, well, I was just curious as to when you read it, you know, and I'm not saying that young females or older females who have had issues with their father's absence.
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying that that's not valid. What I was saying was that who wrote the definition out and how did they come about? You know, my problem is that, first of all, in dealing with daddy issues, as we say, there's always two parents. Now, a lot of times, regardless of how the split came in a relationship, whether it was separation or divorce, it's two parents involved. And sometimes when there's a split, one parent may have the dominant control over shaping the environment of the children. Your daddy ain't shit, or your daddy this, or your daddy this. Putting the negativity in there, even when the father is trying to do the best, and some fathers have to struggle economically, job-wise, and everything. But when you're not there in the custody of that child to actually raise that child, these issues are not always daddy issues. They could be coming from a source. And they're shaping the environment to have this person to have a negative response to her father.
And, let's take a break, Brother Brown, and we'll come right back and pick up.
Right.
Take a quick break. You're listening to the Lotus Plays. Do you have daddy issues?
Thank you. Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
American Negro collectively is richer than most nations of the world. We have an annual income of more than $30 billion a year, which is more than all of the exports of the United States and more than the national budget of Canada. Did you know that? That's power right there, if we know how to prove.
We should own and operate and control the economy of our community. We have to become involved in a program of re-education to educate our people into the importance of knowing that when you spend your dollar out of the community in which you live, the community in which you spend your money becomes richer and richer. The community out of which you take your money becomes poorer and poorer. And because these Negroes who have been misled, misguided, are breaking their necks to take their money and spend it with the man is becoming richer and richer, and you're becoming poorer and poorer. And then what happens? The community in which you live becomes a slum. It becomes a ghetto. The conditions become run down. And then you have the audacity to complain about poor housing in a rundown community. Why, you run it down yourself when you take your dollar.
We've got to strengthen black institutions. I call upon you to take your money out of the banks downtown and deposit your money in Tri-State Bank. We are telling you to follow what we are doing. Put your money there. You have 6 or 7 black insurance companies here. Take out your insurance there. Now, these are some practical things that we can do. We begin the process of building a great economic base. We've got to give ourselves to this struggle until the end. We got to see it through.
So our people not only have to be re-educated to the importance of supporting black business, but the black man himself has to be made aware of the importance of going into business. And once you and I go into business, we own and operate at least the businesses in our community, what we will be doing is developing a situation wherein we will actually be able to create employment for the people in the community.
The black man must unite in one grand racial hierarchy, making a racial empire upon which the sun shall never set. Be black, white, black, peace, black, and all of them together with us.
And that was Malcolm Martin, Dr. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and the Honorable Marcus Garvey speaking on building an economic base, what we need. Let me see. Mother Zola, you want to offer a comment? And also, we need to move into our mind, body, and spirit segment. So we can just flow right into that. And then, oh, Brother Brown, we'll pick back up where you left off also. I think Aja wants to ask something of you, and then we'll pick back up with you and move quickly into our mind, body, and spirit segment. And we must read Delta Cougar's letter.
Yes.
Delta, are you ready?
Yes, I am. Whenever you get ready.
All right. Okay, Mother Zola?
Oh, I didn't have a question. I just wanted to make a comment on sure. What Brother Brown has said about the women's role in daddy mm-hmm. issues. This is yeah. from a Netflix pic that I saw this week, and it was called Comeback Dad. And he was very close with his daughter as they were growing up till she was about 8 or so, and he taught her how to play the piano. They were both musicians. And it just started with her getting ready to get married. And evidently she did not want to have anything to do with her father anymore. And she just didn't even like hearing his name. She really had some issues regarding her father, and her fiance couldn't figure out what it was. But he knew that it was affecting their relationship. She didn't really trust and love him fully, and he could feel it. He could feel it. She was a good person and everything, but he could just feel that she was holding back. So the father upon seeing this ad in the paper, he was going to a therapist, and the therapist had asked him to write down three things that he wanted to do. And one of them was, I want to get back into my daughter's life. Two, get my job back, get my gig back, where he was playing the piano, and something. The third one's to do something good for somebody. So, give you the quick synopsis of the story by telling you what happened. They did get back together through a lot of trials, because she just broke down every time she saw him, and he kept trying to get to her through the fiance, who luckily, you know, kind of worked with him. But in the end, he asked the mother, he said, "You didn't tell her, did you?" And the mother was so hurt by him leaving, and he had become an alcoholic, by the way. That's how he lost his gig and missed out on a lot of the daughters growing up, graduation, all the special events that she had. He missed out on it. And she loved him so much, you know, because of the closeness that they had when they were growing up. She couldn't understand why he left. And so one day he asked the wife, he said, "You didn't tell her, did you?" And she kind of dropped her head. And what he meant was, he had been sending her letters and, you know, a few dollars here and there of what he had. But she was so angry with him for leaving, and she was so hurt because she loved him very much, that she never told the daughter that he had tried to make contact. And she had thought all those years that he had never tried to reach out to her. And it finally came out, you know, at the wedding and everything, that he had been trying to reach, and they had the dance together, and they played the piano together, and all of that. And I said all that to say is that, yes, sometimes a woman, and thank goodness I never did that to my daughter. I never talked bad about her father to her, never, not once. I wanted her to have her own opinion of her father without my input, and he did take very good care of her financial, whatever she wanted, whatever thing, anything she wanted to be in, he was there. But to break it all down, it was still called daddy issues, because she could not trust men. She didn't feel like her fiance would stay with her because her dad had left. And although the mother stopped this, it was still in all of her perception is 100% truth to the person. So all these years she thought, my daddy doesn't love me, he didn't come to graduation, mm-hmm. he didn't, you know, whatever, right. So that absolutely was my
and that spills over into your relationships, because you think, well, you know, what did I do? So
right.
You grow up as a child wondering, what did I do to cause my dad to leave, to cause the separation,
right.
You know, whatever happens. And then so you do have a fear of, is this man going to like me? Oh, what must I do in order for him to like me and not leave? Things like that. So,
and I did my best when I was a little girl. I did my best when I was a little girl, and it didn't work.
Right, so who knows? Let me read this now for men, because men also have daddy issues. This is not just related to females, to women. Okay, daddy's issues for men. Are you aloof? Okay, you focus your mind on things that other than like what's actually going on in a relationship. You're just like aloof, just carefree, just like, no concentration or focus whatsoever.
Right.
Hardly on the relationship. Not like relationships need. I've never been married, but I've heard that marriages are work. It requires work. You have to work to sustain and maintain that relationship. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if some of you have been married. Maybe you can.
Yes, you do. It's not smooth sailing just because you say I do.
Number two, you are unconcerned. I think that falls in the line of just being aloof too. But anyway, number two, you're unconcerned. Number three, you're disrespectful.
Ooh.
I know a lot of... Okay. Number four, You're commitment phobic. Commitment phobic.
Oh yeah.
You learned early. Yeah. This plays into what we were speaking about. You learned early in life not to rely on people. They were unreliable. They always disappoint you. It hurts. And to avoid being hurt again, you avoid making commitments. Okay, you're irresponsible. Okay. You're unaffectionate. If you were touched at all as a child, it was to have the crap beat out of you. Showing affection by touching someone doesn't come naturally for you. It feels awkward. Wow. That's interesting.
It is.
And being irresponsible, then we need to move on into our mind, body, and spirit. We'll have to have a part two on this because I do want to delve deeper into this. Being irresponsible, you were never able to figure out how to do things right. It seems like the rules always change. Rather than be blamed for things going wrong, when you do everything to try to get them right, it's easier just to say, I guess, hey, it wasn't my fault. Oh, deflection or something like that. Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, it's always like, it's something else. You're not at fault for whatever it is. You're not at fault. It's something else. But anyway, but does anyone want to offer a comment on any of those? And then we'll move into the mind, body, and spirit of Mother Zola.
I've experienced aloofness, like you're not really there with some guys after the initial fanfare.
Yes. I've experienced that. But it's kind of new because men didn't really used to behave in that manner too much when we were coming up. It's like there's just been like a shift in the whole relationship dynamic.
Big shift.
Because men, I mean, even if they were, I guess, seeing you and maybe two other women, I mean, they still took you out and had a good time. Treated you like you were number one while they were out with you to the concerts and all of this and that, whatever it is. So, and now it's almost, I can guess say all of these, some of them, not all men, because I come across some really nice ones. Some of them are just unaffectionate because they don't know how to be affectionate unless you're horizontal. They're irresponsible because some of them are irresponsible because I've experienced some people will arrange an evening out with you. And for whatever reason, they don't even call to, not only not call to confirm, you know, a couple of days before, whatever, the day of, they don't even, damn it, call to tell you, hey, I forgot. Hey.
Right.
My mind.
Hey. Right.
Whatever. They just, you know, don't call, and then they'll call you a day or so later, whatever, like.
A week or two later.
You're like, whatever.
And act like nothing happened. Hey, what's going on?
And that goes into the number two, unconcerned. They're completely unconcerned about anybody else's time or feelings, and it's disrespectful. So, but not all men are like that. But I can see that playing into some daddy issues. So, okay, Aja, give us some yoga benefits.
Okay, first of all, what is yoga? And I want to talk about some of the myths of yoga. Is it mostly for women? Is it mostly for, you know, men people? Where did it originate from? What are men called who practice yoga? What about the women? Why do people say om? And what does it mean? And are there different types of yoga? And if you're pregnant or have a bad back, or ladies, Mother Nature's visiting, you know, can you still do yoga? And what is kinetic yoga? What does it really do for you? And what does namaste mean? So these are kind of some of the things I wanted to share with your audience. First of all, yoga, it's a Sanskrit word, Y-U-G-Y-U-G-I, which means yoke, is in yoking oneself and binding oneself to something. So the practice of yoga is yoking oneself with your higher self. Conscious breathing is yoking oneself to your higher self. The breath is the spirit's connection to the body. So once the breath's gone, the spirit is gone. So the breath is really important. So it's part of a practice called pranayama, which is, you know, it strengthens, you know, that connection that you're trying to get to. So a female who practices yoga is called a yogini, and a male who practices yoga is called a yogi, like yogi, like Yogi Bear. Y'all remember Yogi? It's too young for that. All right, Yogi Bear. There are reportedly 8 different limbs of yoga. We won't go through all of them, but 3 of them the audience is probably most familiar with, and you may have heard of it. The asanas, and those are the postures that you take. You know, you have your arm up, your leg back, and you hold it. And then you have the dhyani, and that's meditation. That's where the meditation, most people are familiar with meditation. And then you have the pranayama, which is the breathing. And we do have our conscious breathing classes at the Lotus Place, so keep in tune for that. So the asanas, they're physical postures, and they're designed mostly to purify the body and provide physical strength and stamina. So I love that, the asanas. Breathing, I do that too. Breathing cures things like high blood pressure, it cleanses your organs, and there are certain breathing techniques that you can do for calming, and there are certain breathing techniques that you can do for energizing. And the breathing, the conscious deep breathing, it also helps with any kind of stress-related illnesses. And most people of color, that's where our illnesses come from. They come from stress, you know. I mean, look at what we just talked about. The meditation, of course, it clears your mind of negative thoughts and allows you to receive messages from your higher self, because the traffic, quote-unquote, is clear. You know, so just imagine you're trying to call somebody to give them this valuable information on the phone, and then they've got all this noise in the background. The husband is screaming before his dinner. The children are crying. They want milk. Your mother-in-law is over there. She's yelling. And the person that's on the other end cannot get through to you the information that they need for you to get, because you got all this rattling in the back. So that's why meditation is good, so you can clear that passageway to your higher self, so you can get special messages, special information that is there waiting for you. But your mind is so clogged up, you're missing out. So the physical, the asanas, like I said, those are probably the most popular. But breathing and the breathing and the meditation, those are great. So yoga is not an exercise. First of all, it's actually better for me. It's not the traditional fitness or the stretching. It's not like that. Because with yoga, it's better because you connect the movement of the body with the fluctuations of the mind to the rhythm of your breath. So this helps direct your attention inward. And that's where the healing began, inward. So if you got special needs, like you got a bad back, they got special yogas for the spine. I do neck asanas, the physical yoga, for my headaches. It really, really works. They just have a yoga that says neck yoga, and that's what I do. They have yogas for ladies who are menstruating. It eases the discomfort that you may experience. They have yoga for pregnant women, so you'll have healthy, strong babies. Yoga to strengthen your legs. And if you feel like you're not flexible, you know, or you may be a little overweight, then you're perfect. You're a perfect candidate for yoga, because it helps you. They've got easy flexibility movements. And it's like saying that you don't want to take tennis lessons because you don't know how to play tennis. You start as you are. You come as you are, and you will become more flexible as you go on. So let's talk about kinetic yoga. Now, kinetic yoga, it emerges from one of the oldest known civilizations, which is ancient Egypt, probably called Kemet in northwestern Africa, and rivals the evolution of yoga in India. Did y'all get that? Yoga is from ancient Egypt. Kemetic yoga was developed by studying, translating, and interpreting the commonly called hieroglyphic text of Kemet, ancient Egypt, and the images of yogic postures that are clearly painted on the walls in ancient Egypt. We see them all the time. The ladies and the men in those poses, those are much, much older than the India practice yoga that started about 5,000 years ago in India.
And so not only did white people co-opt yoga, and co-opt it from the Indians, they co-opt it from the black people. And so, you know, for years, I attributed yoga practice to white people because they're always the ones sitting around here and there on TV because, you know, they're all over the damn media. You know, and so it's like, oh, yoga, it was related to white people. And once I started practicing yoga, and then I learned the history, and you make the connection. And it's like, oh, this was a spiritual practice that the ancestors engaged in on a daily basis. It wasn't all about...
It was part of their lifestyle.
Yeah, I'm not trying to exercise or lose weight or anything like that. It was
Yeah.
It's like meditation. It's a practice. It's a ritual.